and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from Nicosia, Cyprus, and with me, all the way from Reykjavik in Iceland, I have Sigrdur Björg Gunnarsdóttir. She's going to have to help me because I'm having difficulty with her Icelandic name. Welcome, Sigrdur.
Thank you so much.
To introduce you to our listeners, you and I met a few years ago in Athens, Greece, at the finalization of an event about changing processes within reporting of gender-based violence. And we all know, all of us that care, which is it's basic human right, care about the fact of gender-based violence, the victims that have difficulty firstly in reporting and in getting accountability. So I think that's a good place to start, but to let the listeners also know that you've been in law enforcement for over 20 years.
Yes, thank you. I've actually started my career as a tax commissioner out in the countryside in Iceland. And that was quite interesting. I was very, very young. And then I became a commissioner of police in 2002. So it's more than 20 years now.
Okay. It sounds like a job you love. But what takes you with that job that you love is introducing gender equality within the police force itself, within the force itself. So let's start. You start wherever you feel is important, but I know gender-based violence is something that's very, very close to your heart.
Absolutely. Gender-based violence, inequality, and basic human rights are very close to my heart, and those are all intertwined. So the starting point of all of this is to see that the police is actually a service organization. If you understand that the police is not a power organization, but a service organization, then you need to understand the clients. And our clients are of all genders, but almost half of our clients are women. That's why it's so important to have gender equality in the police, to understand our clientele and be ready to meet our clients on within their spectrum, within their realities. And
because,
I learned it the hard... Yes, sorry.
Because we all know that when you're a victim of gender-based violence, a lot of the time it's easier to speak to a woman than it is to speak to a man. It can be, but it's a better starting point than a man, usually. It doesn't mean that just because you're a woman, you're more sensitive. But I think often it's the optics of the victim that comes in. But you know better, so carry on.
Well, it can be both. Once I went to meet a group of teenagers actually, that had been victimized and suffered sexual violence. And they were talking to me and other police commissioners in Iceland about their experience with the system. And I was very surprised that they said that they would have wanted to choose whether they spoke to a woman or a man. So I had given, my perspective was that a woman was always a better choice for a person who had been subjected to sexual violence. But that was not true. And also, when I was a commissioner at the airport police many years ago, there came a psychologist that came to visit me, and he was asking how we were doing on gender-based violence. And I remember I told him, we are actually doing well. We have now great women in the investigative unit, and we have now more equal gender numbers, etc. And we are taking this very seriously. And then he asked the question, how many cases are actually going to court? So I started to check that, and it was not many cases. So it was not enough to have women. We needed to understand our clientele. So that's why we started with a project that we called To Keep the Window Open, and we discussed, I think, in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about to understand the circle of violence, because the police comes in when the act of violence has happened, usually. And then we take the original report, and then we want to investigate maybe a day or two later, because many incidents are in the middle of the night, they're during the weekend, and the investigators usually work, 9 to 5 or
Office
whatever.
hours.
Yeah, office hours. So just, and when we understood that the circle of violence, the amounting tension, first there's tension, then there's the outburst, then there's the negotiation or regret or honeymoon, whatever you call that period, and then there's the good times. And none other, we can get the information and the support and cooperation when the violence has happened, but not in the other realms of the circle. So to understand our clientele is so important. And because of that, we could change the way we worked, and we changed it. So now when there is an act of violence, domestic violence, we go all in. We investigate fully on scene. We have cameras, we take statements, we
And it's
take forensic
immediate.
evidence, immediate, take
It's
forensic
immediate.
evidence, yes. And we actually have to have, there's a checklist that the police has to do, police officer. It's not a choice. We have to go the full mile. We have to do everything. And then we can take the serious cases and take them to court, even if the victim or survivor does not cooperate. And that means that we have a much better chance of getting a conviction and stopping the violence, ending it, if we have better evidence. And the evidence is there on the scene at the time when the circle of violence is open for us. So that was one part. And we also had to understand how it is to be in a violent relationship where there's also needed psychological and social support. So we've got the municipalities to send a person, not just to help with the children or not child protective services, but actually a service provider for the victim survivor that also can help to get a doctor's appointment and get all the possible, whatever you need to prove the violence. So that also helped. So we did this the other different way, and just by changing our methods, reported crime before we changed our methods, reported domestic violence was 20% of all violent crimes in Iceland. After we changed our situation, changed our program, it was about 50%.
But that's more
So
than doubled.
it more than doubled. And it's all a part of understanding our clients and accommodating, listening to the people that we are providing service for. So, for example, in some countries, you have maybe really great police working with domestic violence, but they don't have the proof necessary from the incidents because they have to get them themselves. They don't get the police officers to make a statement at the scene. So just the first steps are much more difficult. And we are talking in Iceland, where we are the 16th year in a row, number one in equality. So it should have been more, what can I say, automatic, but it had to be changed by hand.
But we all know, if you've worked with gender-based violence, and I've worked but not in detail, you do know that unless you deal with the situation the minute it's in your face, the person who is the victim is lost because she loses courage, or she gets threatened, or she gets scared, or she changes her mind because he brings her a gift. So this immediate recognition that when they come to you or they reach out to you, that you're immediately there to step forward and listen, first of all, is priceless. And
You could just see it in the numbers, in the numbers, the numbers speaks for themselves. It's not an increase. And also just to acknowledge that this is not some family issue, that, or it's not something to be ashamed of. This is a violence, just like any other violence, and should be dealt with by the police as such. And if we see this femicides, we see all these manslaughter, murder cases that are because of gender-based violence, and we really look at the numbers, then we see how important this is. So, it's very close to my heart, as you can hear.
That's what you say to us. It's got to move out of the realm that it's a family issue. If I'm a victim of domestic violence, it means my child is affected. It means my health and my personality is affected. It means my productivity at work changes. It's a whole chain of events or actions that ultimately, to put it in a way that the state understands, costs money. Because
Yes.
productivity goes down. My child might need more psychological support. I might need to go to the hospital. So it's very sad that we need to put it in that context. That
Absolutely.
when you deal with gender-based violence immediately and effectively, you're actually saving the state money. You're saving people, which is the first thing you're doing, but the state only understands that you're actually saving their money in the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And not just only that, it's so much health issues that are related to this, and so much harm that inflicts. It can even be generational
Exactly.
when you are a grow up within the cycle of violence, then it might be something that you just take as granted and you seek into these relationships again and again and again. So we need
It's
to
not just
stop the chain. Yeah.
about breaking an arm, and I don't want to minimize breaking an arm,
No.
but it's something within your soul that unless you deal with it, it does you take it, you spread it to the people around you and to the next generation. So it's a very, very important issue. I think for us activists, you cannot remain unaffected when you hear about gender-based violence because we've all in some way been affected, maybe not directly, but we've all maybe affected. We might have family that's been affected. Might have seen someone else that's been affected. So it's not something that happens to others. We've seen it happen or we've had it happen to us.
Absolutely. And it's so important when you speak about activists. One of the things that we did is that we built a family justice center with NGOs and other partners. We partnered up with people that were activists and NGOs in Iceland. So Stígamót, which is an NGO organization that receives victims of sexual crimes. And they t say that most of their victims are children, even if they are grown up. And to clarify that, m many of the cases that they come to them, many of the people that come to them, not cases, but people, they had been abused when they were children, but they seek help when they're grown up. So many things happen in your childhood that you're dealing with the rest of your life. Just to get them on board and work with them, and also, to accept that. Sexual violence is part of domestic violence, and understand how it hangs together, the choking hold, how that hangs together. And making this center that we did together, it was the municipality, it was the police, it was Stígamót, it was also the women's shelter, were all kinds of partners that partnered so that there was a one-stop shop for the victim or survivor. So we are all there. For your help, you don't have to go between A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And also in COVID, we got funding and then we built a digital center that's called 112.is, which is our emergency line, 112. When we have an emergency situation, we call 112. So we now have this digital platform, 112.is, and it's in many languages, not Greek. But it's in English and other languages. So that is also where you can go and you can make an appointment with health services. You can make an appointment with our Family Justice Center. You can contact the police directly and you can do it by text messages. You don't have to call. Maybe the child calls. We've had important cases where incidents where the where a child is connecting us and they do it by their phone, not by calling, but by texting. So we also have to understand the younger generations. They just really have a different way of approaching each other. They do it by the by different way, by texting or using a messenger or whatever it is. So
But that's also good for, because sometimes women that are victims of gender-based violence are isolated, and all they have is a
yes.
telephone, so they don't have the ability to come and see you. So having a text message is a simpler method.
And also in that 112.is, there's a lot of material. Lot of, we are taking all the material from all the excellent NGOs. They're making short videos. There's a video interview with the dispatchers, how they deal with phone calls, to make sure that you understand what services you can get. And so maybe many of the victims, they don't understand that they're victims. It's just a situation they're in. And sometimes they need to, best way to understand it and seek help is from with peer-to-peer discussions, or getting to listen to other people in similar situations.
It gives you
So that's also
courage.
There.
It
Yes,
gives you courage
absolutely.
when you hear that, when you hear that you're not alone, because a lot of the time you're too scared to step out because you think it's only me, I'm alone, I'm isolated. But when you hear these narratives, you realize you're actually not alone. There's a big crowd of you. So it's safer and you've got someone's got your back.
Absolutely.
But I also know that you worked really hard to get gender equality within the police force. That was another one of your big projects. Tell us about that.
Okay, that has been quite a journey also, and you have to view it in with the eyes that Iceland is a very, very equal country, and it's a privilege to be in such a position. I was the first commissioner of police in as a woman, and also the first national commissioner of police as a woman, and also the first commissioner of Metropolitan Police as a woman. So I have broken a few glass ceilings in my time, and it's not always easy, because equality and trying to drive equality campaigns and changes of the culture, mostly it's a change of culture. It's not just about the laws or planning. You can have all kinds of strategies and all kinds of things that you cannot they don't they are not implemented unless to change the culture. So what I did is a lot of things.
And can I just
Many of
interrupt
the
you?
things
Can I just
are
interrupt you there? And you live in Iceland. Imagine the culture changes in Southern Europe. Okay. Even though I have
I
to
can
say
just imagine. I can
are
just
steps,
imagine.
even though there are steps being taken, and in some ways we are not bad, and there are developments and progress, we still a very conservative, traditional patriarchal community. So if you're having a hard time, we're having a triple hard time. But carry on.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is why we have so many sexual crimes and so much domestic violence being number one. Inequality, it's c completely out of tact with where we stand in international comparison, that we still have all these gender-based violence despite our place there, despite all the strong women. I mean, we have our prime minister is a woman, our president is a woman, we have the three chairmen of the political parties in government are all women. The bishop is a woman for the first, no, the second time now. So it should be easier. But when I started in the Metropolitan Police in 2014, there were only about 14% police women. And we have gone well up to more than 35, I think, now. And we are on a very good roll with that. But we had to change the education. There was a standalone police school that was not very gender friendly. All kinds of things there that would take a long time to explain. So we went up to a university education, and that was quite a great change. We had 50-50 applicants last year. Not quite the same now, but it's very moving very fast. But it was also the hidden things. For example, when those who had command of people, when they were on leave, they usually took some man that would be an interim, stand in. But the
Okay.
women did not get the chance. So when they were applying for the same job, The male applicant had much more experience because he had been the one who was taking care of the team when they were on summer leave and all of that, sickness, etc. So we had to equal the playing ground on all levels. But the most important part for me was, I think that you cannot change culture unless it's you take it. It has to be from the top down. There cannot be a
Absolutely.
human resource person, despite however wonderful they are, they cannot make this kind of change. It has to be from the top down. It has to be something we say out loud. We are equality is a human right. Equality is something that we stand for. You have to have outside review. For example, UN Women are taking a review on us right now on how we are dealing with certain issues. And that is so important. The academia is so important to take reports, for example, on harassment. There was quite an uproar in Iceland because we saw that so many of our police women were harassed by their superiors. So we had to
That's a
have the
very serious
academia,
issue. That's a very serious
very
issue.
serious issue. Then we had, but the one of the most important part is to get the role models that are more often men than women. I'm a middle-aged woman, even if I have 4 stars. The guys in the tactical teams, they are the real role models for young police officers. Those who have the hostage rescue teams, have the arms training, have a different kind of uniform, they are more of
Role
a role
models.
model. So what you do is that you take these that have the right views, that those actually who are the right, have the right heart and the courage to talk about these issues, and you put them in charge. So when you have people around you that have the right thoughts and really are ready to act on it, then things start turning. So all of these issues together, outside review, you have to measure it. You have to all the time put numbers, talk about it, normalize it,
And
and
what we said, sorry, and what we said earlier, and you need to include men in this because it's not just a woman's issue. You need to bring in the,
absolutely
you
all
need
the
to bring the,
time.
yeah.
But the good guys are really the enemy
Feminists.
here. Yeah,
The good
but
guys are feminists.
some of them are, but some of the good guys are really the enemies of equality because they understand they are not thinking like this. So they really don't understand how the situation is for women in a male-dominated organization. So you need to mobilize them. You need to show them into the reality. And that you do by having outside review, by showing them the reports, how it actually is. And then you can get them to be in front of to front the necessary steps.
Okay. It's true because sometimes the good guys are just doing a good job and they don't realize how ingrained in them the patriarchy is or the conventional social constructs are. And
And they're,
what you've
yes.
said, it's also women that are sometimes like that. It's not just a male thing. It's in a lot of us, we do automatic things and then you step back and you think, oh, did I just make a racist comment? Or did just I was I just acting, saying something so conventionally straight. I mean, it is. We all need to check ourselves regularly.
And I have to tell you, the people that I have the difficult, most difficult cooperation with are not the men. It's the women in the highest positions, usually.
Why?
I think it's the bee, queen bee syndrome. They have had to fight so much to be where they are that it's a fight all the time. And I think I feel it when, as I get higher up in the chain of hierarchy. It's not when you're on the lower levels, but the higher you climb, the higher, the more battled it becomes with between women fighting for the same places within the police. That's my experience.
I wouldn't disagree with you because I also think women battle to get into positions, and when they're there, they want to stay there and they don't want to share. I mean, I can understand, I don't agree, but I can understand.
And they talk about it as the, we talk about the glass ceiling. But there's also the glass sill, that because it's easier to slide down from your seat as a woman than as a man in the same position. And we see that a lot. I see it in politics. I've had 13 ministers of justice in this last 23 years. Many of them have been women, and they are not tolerated any mistakes. So I think that there is this glass ceiling is very relevant, even in a country like mine.
We still have a long way to go, and it looks like this backlash is not helping us.
Exactly.
And because we are limited with time, because I know you're busy, you have somewhere to go, I want to just turn the tables. I know that crime has changed. Drugs, organized crime, terrorism. And I know one of the things you're quite sensitive about is how do you keep your police force safe? Because it's not the traditional policeman walking down the street. He's got a gun, he's got a club, he's got his bullet, and he's prepared. What are you doing? Because we all sit around us that the crime landscape is so complex and so multidimensional. How do you keep your police people safe?
This is such a good question. So incredibly good. We have been measuring the sense of security and safety that the police officers feel in their work. We are not getting high enough numbers. And then you have to analyze what is it that is their place of work? Is it when they walk out on the street? Is it the police car? Is it the police station? Is it when they go out in civilian clothes with their families? Are they a target? And we see there is a hardening attitude against police officers. We are seeing doxing. Even here in Iceland, we had a policewoman, her car was torched because of a case. She was working in front of
Explain
her family house.
doxing.
Doxing is when you when there is a published photo or information about police officers, where they live,
The
and
personal data comes out.
personal data and even encouragement to go there and harm the person or the family or both. So we are seeing an increase of that. And in Iceland, it's even more delicate because we don't have a military and we are not a very big police force. And most of the police is unarmed. It's only the hostage rescue team that is armed. And you have to look at it, it's in the light that we are the most secure country when it comes to, you know, safe peace and security. If you measure it not internationally. But on the other side, we are seeing far more organized crime here. We are seeing the blue zone with that comes from increased security threat in the world. We're also seeing that here in Iceland. We are seeing children being vulnerable to being used in situations where crime as a service is being used, even from foreign states. It all hangs together and everything is happening here. So also like in other countries, but because we are so small, it's happening on a smaller scale. So what can we do to do this better? I think there are a few key elements in that. The biggest issue is to get enough police officers, you know, that you're not alone in the shift, that you always have enough people that can back you up. The next is the training. The training needs to be excellent. And even if people do not walk around armed, they have access to arms. And we recently took up Taser, not just to use it, but also as a deterrence. We see it's used often as a deterrence that people do not attack police officers that have Taser. They don't want to be, you know,
Okay.
get electric shocks. So we see that a lot. But also international cooperation is so important because then we can identify those who are really dangerous, that they cannot hide in Iceland, that we know actually who we are dealing with. So that is so important, and we are trying to do much, much better in that area. And then there's the psychological support. And I don't know how much time we have, but I have a story to share on that.
As long as you've got time, I've got time.
I'm tiring your audience.
Absolutely not.
What
We always
happened?
like hearing stories.
Okay. When I was a young commissioner of police, I was working in the border police station, and I was head of that station, of that police district. And we saw that many of our people were being affected by difficult situations they were walking into. And there is psychological help provided, but you have to ask for it. You have to, you know, make yourselves known that you want to use your time in that, and it's paid for you. But there were not enough people using it. So I said to my chiefs that were my next in command, chief superintendents, that now we should go forward, stop talking about this and actually do it. We should all go and see a psychologist, and we should talk about it in the coffee shop, with the coffee machine, say it everywhere that we had gone ourselves and how good it was to do this. They were not very happy at first, and I told them they could talk about their mother-in-law or whatever. They just needed to go. And then I went myself. And this was the first time I had sought help. And it's many years ago. I'm talking maybe 2009. And I went there and I was talking to the psychologist and said, I'm just here to make a good example for the police officers that are out there doing their job. And they need to be helped there because there's a high risk of suicide when you're in the police. The numbers show us that. And I think that's a universal thing. So, and he said, well, since you're here, why don't you come and tell me
About
about
your
what should
mother-in-law.
bother you? Yes. And I was really, no. I don't have any problems at all. My life is great. And somehow, being a psychologist, he lured me into the chair and I started talking. And it ended like that. He had to say many times, Sigrid, your time is up. Please leave. I have another client coming in. And I was talking about things that I actually didn't know were there, that they were bothering me. But because I sat there with a complete stranger that knew his business, I was able to unload that. And we see a lot of more and more people seeking help, seeking support. It's being normalized. It's not a question of whether something is wrong or you're doing something wrong or you have a problematic something. It's just a way to strengthen you as a person, but also you in the job. And also we have special teams that help each other when there's big crisis, a crisis response team, etc. So it's also psychological.
Just to interrupt you, going to a
Yeah.
psychologist is very important self-care because we
Yes.
all assume, well, I'm okay, there's nothing wrong. And
Exactly.
then when you sit down and you start talking and someone asks you a trigger question or mentions something, you suddenly realize, well, maybe I'm not okay.
Exactly.
And you do feel better when you've actually spoken it to someone who is not going to judge you, who's just going to listen and who's going to guide your conversation to make sure you don't feel there's a big relief and it's you there's nothing wrong with you. All you're doing is looking after your mental health. That's all you're doing. Because if your mental health is good, you're okay, which means you can operate within the community, the family, the professional context that you're in. You operate better.
Absolutely. And this should just be mandatory for everyone, but it's difficult to have it mandatory because people really want to, need to talk and want to talk, not just to be forced to do it. So I think leading by example is a good way to get this, to change this. But because we were talking about equality, it's also a question of being safe in your job, that you're not being harassed doing your job, especially by your supervisor. And we did a survey on this or a research on this maybe 10 years ago and then a follow-up now. And the 10 years ago survey was really, really bad. It was showed that there was a lot of harassment towards women. Men were harassed as well, but that was not nearly enough. And that was mainly by the clients. But now we did a follow-up research 10 years later, and then we see that the harassment is still there, but it's more verbal than physical, which is, of course, better, but it's still not acceptable. So equality and respect is so important. And I was on a women's conference last week in Glasgow, International Association of Women Police, and there was a very interesting lecture there on misogyny and how that can impact acts of terrorism, all kinds of things that where equality and how you treat women can really impact the safety and security in the society as a whole. And we are not nearly focused enough on that.
No, we're not.
We see the racism, we see the political views, left wing, left right, all of this. But this misogyny is a growing concern and growing problem. So what I just want to end by saying, the equality issue and gender-based violence issue is, like like a rubber elastic. You know, if you push it too hard and try to change everything in one day, it will break. But if you don't have the courage to push it hard enough, nothing will happen. So you always have to keep the right, suspense on the elastic. But my disappointment throughout my career that spans now more than 20 years is that every time I think that we are done, that now we are in a place where I'm comfortable,
We're not.
where a place where I would want my daughter to work in and, to take the daughter test is it is acceptable. Would I want my daughter in this environment? Which I think is something we should all think about once in a while. And I just start to work with other things because we have so many things that we can do better in policing. And then as soon as we look to other projects, it just starts to slide back again.
So there's a lot of despair, but I want to ask you one question before we close, and that is the harassment within the police force that you said happens. Are there processes in place in which they can report, and are they taught? Because a lot of the time they're too scared to report because they might get fired, they might not be believed. So are there processes and procedures in place to make it easier for women police officers that are harassed in any degree?
There are procedure and processes, and we have all kinds of mechanisms that should help. But many women come to me and tell me about their problems and do not want anything done about it. They want me to do this indirectly, never under a name, never directly. And I cannot really, by good conscience, tell them it will be all right. You will not be punished in any way, and it will not
Affect
affect
you.
your career in the future. I cannot promise that because I'm not always there, you know. So it is a very difficult situation. So we just have to keep on working with this and speaking about it and saying it all the time. We do not accept this kind of behavior. We really need to be looking at equality. We need to look with respect at each other. But as I said, it's not always simple, and it seems to be a never-ending project.
I think that's a very good place to finish, because I think we know the fight is not over, so we just need to carry on pushing the elastic band. They're not hard enough to snap, but continue pushing it, because if the minute we let it go, it's all going to collapse, and that's not good for anyone. So, Sigvi Dur, I thank you very much for being with me today. I have so many more questions to ask you, but we'll leave it for another conversation. And I thank you very much, because security within the police force is something that's so important, because it's important for within the police force, but it's also important for the way the police force deals with gender-based violence, because victims of gender-based violence need to feel safe to report,
Thank
because
you
that is
so
good for
much.
everyone.
Absolutely.
Good for
Thank you very
everyone.
much. It was an honor to participate in your podcast. Thank you so much,
And lovely
Magda.
to see
You
you
are
again,
you too.
and have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank
Bye
you.
bye.
Bye-bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.